and the wheels just keep turning.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Stocks are sharply higher amid these reports that General Motors Bondholder Committee has accepted an amended debt offer. Trading in GM shares has been halted. CNBC is reporting the bondholders would get 10% of the equity in the company, and that might still not spare the company from bankruptcy, however. It's the morning open. The market's coming up in just a moment, but some breaking news this morning. We're going to talk to Doug Foreman now, Director of Equities at Highmark Capital, joining us live this morning from San Francisco. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
We appreciate it. Of course, we have this report, even though bankruptcy is still possible, and we know that Wall Street's factored in this bankruptcy. How does this change the game?
Well, I think it could be incrementally positive news if GM doesn't have to file bankruptcy, because I believe that the market is fully anticipating that that is the route that the company is going to have to take. So the equity, you know, under that scenario wouldn't be worth very much, and if they're able to work out something with the bondholders, then it's possible that the equity may have some value going forward.
Why do you think bondholders have changed their mind and taken this offer?
I think from their point of view, they're probably looking at this as just a way to recover more of their capital. They're not faced with very good choices either way. And obviously, if they decide to accept this deal, then they're believing that they're going to be able to get more money out of this, recover more of their capital under this scenario.
We're hearing trading of GM shares has been halted this morning. Why does something like that happen in a case like this?
Well, you know, as I said before, investors, I believe, had been anticipating a bankruptcy filing probably early next week, perhaps Monday. And if that doesn't happen and they're able to restructure the company in some other way, then the existing equity or the stock that's out there today may actually be worth a little bit more than what it's currently trading at.
All right. Doug Foreman from Highmark Capital in San Francisco. Thanks. Let's check Wall Street. S&P 500 shares up about 1%. As a matter of fact, across the board, NASDAQ up about 1%. The Dow up about 0.7% to 83.58 right now. European shares are lower. London, Frankfurt, Paris shares off by about 1%. And Asian markets were mixed today. We also got word today that durable good orders in April rose 1.9%, much higher than expected. And also we heard from the Labor Department, and jobless claims dropped more than expected to 623,000, but the number of people continuing to collect benefits rose to 6.78 million. That's a record and the highest since 1967. We've been hearing about automakers either filing or on the verge of filing for bankruptcy. We hear this morning that an auto parts maker has entered Chapter 11 protection. Visteon makes climate control systems and other car electronics. Its biggest customer is Ford. Tamara Keith reports from Washington. It looks like the car maker will play a key role in the reorganization.
Visteon has taken a beating from weak auto sales, but actually it hasn't turned an annual profit since it was spun off by Ford almost 10 years ago. Visteon says Ford will be providing its debtor-in-possession financing, the operating cash it will use to keep running during the reorganization.
Whether or not Visteon survives the bankruptcy really probably is dependent upon how much support Ford is willing to give them.
Doug Bernstein is a bankruptcy attorney with the firm Plunkett Cooney. Ford is the only one of the big three not to take a federal bailout. Bernstein says the last thing Ford wants is to be dragged down by one of its suppliers.
My suspicion is Ford ultimately may be able to shed Visteon or parts of Visteon along the way, but I'm not so sure that Visteon can survive without that support from Ford.
Visteon employs more than 30,000 people worldwide. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Talks over the future of General Motors in Europe broke down last night in Berlin. The German government is blaming GM and the U.S. Treasury. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
The German government called the meeting to decide which of four bidders it would prefer to take over GM Europe. The government has a crucial role in this. It's offered financial assistance to the company that wins control. But last night, General Motors and the US Treasury suddenly upped the ante. They revealed the Opel unit needs an additional $400 million in cash now. German politicians and officials are furious. They pulled out of the talks, saying they need more information. German car industry analyst Ferdinand Dudenhofer says the German government may be losing interest in the deal, and he says that would be fatal for GM Europe.
Without the German government, I think there is no possibility to find any investor in normal conditions for General Motors Europe.
But if GM Europe collapses, 50,000 jobs across the continent could be lost. The European Commission's called an emergency meeting tomorrow. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're hearing the Morning Report for Thursday, May 28, 2009, at Marketplace.org. California's dire fiscal crisis has made headlines all around the world, prompting fears that the state could default on its debts. But as Sarah Gardner reports, investors still see states as a pretty good investment.
So far, the Golden State's problems haven't tainted the borrowing ability of other states, and even a crippled California is still attracting investors. It does have the lowest credit rating of any state and pays a premium to borrow, but it's not as much as you'd think, says Marilyn Cohen, president of Envision Capital Management.
The truth of the matter is it's really only a little bit more interest, no matter how bad the headline news is.
Cohen says that's partly because investors know California and other states will do what it takes to avoid defaulting on their debt, including raising taxes. But Tom Petruno, who blogs about bonds for LATimes.com, expects investor attitudes towards public debt could sour long term.
You get more headlines out there talking about problems that cities, counties, or states are having, and bond investors think, maybe I better demand a little more yield here because I'm not quite sure just how safe these really are.
And with states and cities paying more to borrow, that leaves less for schools, parks, roads, and other public services. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
The nonprofit group Families USA reports this morning the average family pays an extra $1,000 a year for health insurance to subsidize the uninsured. That's because doctors and hospitals charge insured patients more to make up for the care they give that doesn't get reimbursed. The report bolsters the argument of those who want to reform health care. It's the first big fight that's already begun, as Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
Back in January, even former rivals seemed ready to work together to cover the uninsured.
Because quality, affordable health care can save money and make businesses more competitive so they can invest in innovation.
Drug and insurance companies, unions, and health care reformers paid for that ad. But the time for making nice may be over. Recently, the CEO of Eli Lilly, John Lechleiter, railed against even the thought of a public health insurance plan to fill in the gaps.
I don't think that American patients would or should accommodate themselves to the long waits for care, limited options, and other forms of rationing that inevitably accompany government health care monopolies.
Lechleiter's worried that any move to offer a publicly run insurance program could push private insurance companies out of business. How a public option would work is still being fleshed out, but if the plan were open to all,
we'd get about 119 million people moving from that coverage to the public plan.
That's John Shields at the Lewin Group. He says a broad government plan could act like Walmart and force doctors and hospitals to lower their prices. That would save billions and undercut private insurers on costs. But would it be a bad thing if people chose the government plan?
I think the physicians and hospitals will think it's a problem.
So will insurance companies and drug companies, all of whom could lose billions. Karen Davenport's at the Center for American Progress. She says it's unlikely a public insurance option would completely crush the private insurance market. Just look at Germany, she says, which has a generous publicly run program and also healthy competition.
There is a robust private market in Germany, too, and I think we'll do as well as that or better.
Davenport says private competitors will prevent any public health insurance plan from becoming a bureaucratic nightmare. But a public option could help cover the uninsured and hold down costs. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
It's auction day for the Treasury Department, looking to sell $26 billion in government bonds today. It's the third Treasury auction this week. The bond du jour is the 7-year note, and the yield on those bonds just keeps rising to numbers not seen since late last year. That comes amid fresh concerns about inflation. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports from New York.
Jim Bianco follows the bond market closely. He's president of Bianco Research in Chicago. And right now, he says, investors are worried about the federal deficit, which is expected to hit $1.75 trillion this year.
The government can finance about half of that through the collection of taxes, meaning that it has to borrow somewhere around $1 trillion or thereabout. That is a big number, and that is a big concern.
The yield on the 10-year note now sits at a six-month high. That's because investors fear that inflation will dilute the value of the dollars they're lending the government, so the government has to pay more to borrow money. Bianco says, yes, the yield is still below where it was last summer, but
it's the speed at which yields have been rising, especially over the last week or two. It was only 10 or 12 days ago that yields were barely above 3%. Now they're at 3.75%. In just a couple of days.
And keep in mind, the Fed has increased its purchases of U.S. Treasuries in recent months in an attempt to keep yields low. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
President Obama announced yesterday nearly $500 million of the federal stimulus money would be used to speed geothermal and solar energy development. But with a recession weakening demand for energy of all kinds, the future isn't looking so green. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
Global electricity use is expected to fall this year for the first time since World War II, according to a report out this week from the International Energy Agency. And that's a good thing. As people use less energy, less CO2 reaches the atmosphere. But there's a potential downside. The recession may pave the way for a dirtier future. UC Berkeley energy policy expert Dan Kamen says tight credit has made investments in renewable energy less appealing.
During a down economic time, known investments, whether those are natural gas or coal, look much more attractive.
Even President Obama's stimulus package may not be enough to give clean energy a boost. Absent a mandatory cap on carbon emissions of the kind now under debate in Congress, there's less incentive for investors to back renewables. That may help explain why the U.S. government now predicts global emissions will jump nearly 40% over the next two decades. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
We get word on new home sales in a few minutes. Another housing number thrown into a big bowl of barometers. And while overall the market's been pretty bleak, a lot of the data points we've been getting have gone in different directions. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to try and make some sense out of it, provide a little context. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So how bad is this housing market?
Well, it's bad, but it's not as bad as it could be. It's really the story of this economy. Think of all the numbers that we get every week that have been coming out. And what do those numbers tell us? Things aren't as bad as they were. They're less bad. And that's the story of the real estate market.
But we've got all these barometers, Chris. The Case-Shiller home price index down. We've got the mortgage applications down. The sales are modestly going up. I mean, what are we to make of all of these numbers?
What I would make of it, it's a market that's starting to find its bottom, that's starting to stabilize. Because you know what? There's no bell that goes off and says, market hit bottom, start buying. So prices keep going down, but sales pick up. That, to me, is a sign of a bottom, which, by the way, can go on for several months.
So it could be an extended time of...
Absolutely. It could be that the market just scrapes along at the level that it's around right now for a considerable period of time.
What kind of anecdotes are we looking for? What should we be looking for going forward in this housing market?
Look, here's the anecdote that I really want to hear, and I'm not hearing right now. A lot of the activity is happening in the foreclosure side of the market. You have first-time home buyers, people taking advantage of the $8,000 tax credit, and they're buying the cheaper homes. What isn't happening is what we call the move-up side of the market. You have more children. Space is crowded. You want a bigger home. You know, that's a really important part of the market, and we're not seeing that.
People are just staying put.
People are staying put. So until you start hearing those stories about, well, I'm going to take that job elsewhere, and therefore I'm going to sell my home and move. Or, you know what, I'm just going to move to a nicer place. Until you hear those stories, we haven't hit bottom.
All right. Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, joining us this morning. Chris, thanks.
Thanks.
Hey, check out our website, marketplace.org. Of course, the latest information there. And you can share your thoughts with us, too. Our online host and blogger, Scott Jago, there as well, inside marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.